I'm Earlonne Woods.
I'm Nigel Poor. We're the hosts and creators of Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia.
Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast.
In this next season, we've got stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells.
About residents in a women's prison who say they want to stay there.
And the most beautiful prison garden. Earlonne, I will never forget it.
Ear Hustle. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it.
Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
You love free, and at Ameris Bank, so do we. That's why we're proud to offer worry-free, hassle-free Ameris Bank free checking. Manage your money your way with convenient access to digital, mobile, and telephone banking, all with no monthly service fee or minimum balance requirements. At Ameris Bank, we're with you. For more information or to open an account, visit our local bankers in person or online at amerisbank.com/free checking. Other fees such as overdraft fees may apply. Ameris Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
For Monday, July the 19th, 2021, it's The Brief from WABE. I'm Jim Burris. Democrats held a field hearing of the Senate Rules Committee in downtown Atlanta today to push for federal voting legislation. This even after Republicans blocked the last attempt to do so. As Emma Hurt reports, the hearing focused on Georgia's Republican-led voting law.
No Republican senators attended this hearing, nor did they send witnesses to testify or defend the law. Helen Butler is a longtime voting rights advocate with the Georgia Coalition for the People's Agenda.
We have been forced to spend even more time and resources fighting discriminatory voting laws and policies and practices at the state and local levels.
Georgia's nearly 100-page law made a lot of changes to voting, including limiting hours of access and locations of absentee ballot drop boxes. Senate Democrats have continued to push for federal voting protections, but without Republican support, their efforts have stalled. Emma Hurt, WABE News.
The city of Atlanta is considering zoning changes that could translate into more housing. Stephanie Stokes reports.
There are three changes under review. One is aimed at increasing housing options near MARTA. It would take single-family areas within a half mile of a transit station and make them multifamily, though developers could only build up to 4 units, 12 if some of the units are affordable. The second change would eliminate parking requirements for residential areas, meaning developers wouldn't have to build any set amount of spaces. The last zoning update would tweak rules for accessory dwelling units, like carriage houses. Those are smaller second homes on a property. The city would let those get a little bigger and a little taller. Councilmember Amir Farouki is bringing the plan before the city council. Neighborhood planning units can provide feedback throughout the summer. Stephanie Stokes, WABE News.
Federal officials want to know how manatees are doing. The creatures have had a terrible year. Many were found dead in Florida. Mark Lanneman reports manatees migrate from that state to the Georgia coast.
In Florida, over 840 manatees have already died in 2021. That's a new single-year record, and it's only July. One cause for the high mortality rate in Florida is a decline in seagrass, a food source for the manatees. Georgia is a different story, however. Tripp Kolkmayer of the Georgia Department of Natural Resources says manatees that make it to Georgia seem to be doing much better.
They'll hopefully spend the summer here, get themselves nourished and fattened up again. And then when things start to cool off, hopefully they'll have enough fat stores and reserves, and hopefully some of the seagrasses will come back in Florida.
Kolkmayer says rising manatee deaths has been a trend over the last few years. The federal government changed manatees from being considered endangered to the less at risk threatened a few years ago. Now, it's looking again at how they're doing as part of a regular 5-year review process. Mark Lenneman, WABE News.
On this day, a quarter century ago, boxing legend Muhammad Ali officially kicked off the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. As Emil Moffitt reports, Ali's lighting of the Olympic flame has become a lasting image.
On that July night in 1996, Olympic star Janet Evans appeared to be running the final leg of the torch relay. Filmmaker Ken Burns says organizers kept Ali's presence a secret.
And Janet runs around the track and runs up to light the flame, and out comes this, you know, figure that had been such a lightning rod for so many positive and negative things, and there he is.
Ali grabbed the torch with his right hand. His left hand was shaking because of the Parkinson's. Would eventually claim his life. Bob Costas described the moment on NBC.
And the response he evokes is part affection, part excitement, but especially respect. What a moment.
The lighting of the Olympic torch in Atlanta is one of the many moments featured in Byrne's new PBS documentary about Muhammad Ali.
To see all of these people weeping in Atlanta on TV, it's one of the most poignant moments that I can think of in all of sports.
It was the second time Ali had starred on the Olympic stage. He won a gold medal as a teenager in 1960. That was before his pro boxing titles, before his brash personality rubbed many people the wrong way, before he was exiled from boxing for refusing to take part in the Vietnam War on religious grounds. Ali would live nearly 20 more years, but the 96 Olympics would be one of the last times, Byrne says, that he would hear the roar of the crowd.
He's a mythic figure. You know, he contains multitudes, as Walt Whitman would say, and he represents, as all mythic figures do, our own foibles writ large.
Byrne is set to take part in a virtual roundtable discussion tonight, marking the 25th anniversary of that Olympic moment in Atlanta. The documentary comes out in September. Emil Moffitt, WABE News.
13 games into his first season as Atlanta United's head coach, and Gabriel Heinze is out. The Major League Soccer franchise relieved him of his duties yesterday. It came after a winless 8-game streak capped by another loss to New England on Saturday. But club president Darren Eales and other team officials say it came down to more than just a lack of W's. Doug Roberson covers Atlanta United for the AJC. He says he wasn't surprised by the firing. When we spoke earlier, I asked about Heinze's coaching style, which has come under scrutiny.
He was intense. The supporters were promised an aggressive, attacking style of soccer, a lot of pressing all over the field, similar to what Gerardo Martino did in his first 2 years with the club. And with the exception of the first half against Philadelphia in the Champions League, it really never happened. The offense couldn't really find any kind of chemistry or footing. They've only scored 13 goals in 13 games. He decided to switch to kind of a man-marking system on defense that presented some issues and kind of resulted in the one goal given up to New England and a few others throughout the season. It seemed like one thing was promised and another thing was delivered, and that's why I'm talking to you today.
Also, though, the players had some issues with the coach, even for things, basic things like water during practice.
Yeah, there's not yet a lot of details out about that. I reported on Sunday that the Major League Soccer Players Association, which is the union for the players, have filed grievances with the league regarding Heinze and giving the players the days off from training that are mandated by the collective bargaining agreement. There was another report today by fine journalist Doug McIntyre with Fox that apparently Heinze was limiting the amount of water the players could have in some of the preseason training sessions, which I would imagine is also a violation of the CBA. I'm trying to find that out now. So he was a little draconian sometimes in his training habits and methods.
How does Atlanta United bounce back from this?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. The interim coach is going to be Rob Valentino, who was on staff under Frank DeBoer and on staff under Stephen Glass when he took over as interim last year, remained on staff under Heinze. His job is to kind of, I guess, get the guys feeling good about themselves again. He talked about trying to tell them to take more risks on the field, to create more chances, to hopefully score more goals, and to get some more points because the team is in 10th place right now. It's below the playoff line. In the meantime, the front office, Darren Eales and Carlos Bocanegra, are trying to find a new manager. It's got to be one that knows Major League Soccer and is familiar with some of these players to try to get the best out of them.
What does it say about the Atlanta program that, you know, in its first inaugural years, it was at the top and has since fallen to where it is now?
Yeah, it's not good. To the front office credit, when it realizes something isn't working, it has twice kind of changed gear and tried to get it going again, not put it off until the end of the season when it would have been much easier. But, you know, questions have to be asked about the vetting process of Gabriel Heinze. He was known to be a prickly guy before he got here. He proved to be very, very prickly. A lot of the signings, not all, but a lot, just haven't really lived up to expectations in the past few years. That's another question that has to be asked of the front office and one that will affect the success of the next manager.
What about fans? Are fans sticking with the team?
What's funny is last week, as soon as the news broke about Heinze making Joseph Martinez train by himself, and this was probably just a coincidence, I got to think, the team sent out its season ticket renewal notices to people, which is probably the worst possible time to do that. You go on social media and some people are saying, I don't have to be a season ticket holder if Atlanta United won't start answering questions about what's going on. Others are saying they'll stick by the team no matter what. They're not owed anything. So we don't have any hard numbers yet, but I'm still hoping to get some answers about that.
My final question is, how important is it for the team to get the next hire right?
Oh, it's the most important decision the club has made in a long, long time. They need a manager who's going to be there for more than, you know, a year and a half. They need just to feel good again. They need a guy who knows what the players he wants are and how to get the best of some very expensive players that are on this roster right now.
Doug Roberson is a reporter with the Atlanta Journal-Constitution covering Atlanta United and Major League Soccer. Doug, thank you. As always, it's a good conversation.
Thank you.
And you can find more local news on our webpage at wabe.org. I'm Jim Burris. Thanks for listening to The Brief.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Local, state, national politics. WABE and NPR have the coverage you need. I'm Jim Burris, host of WABE's All Things Considered. Whether it's on the air at 90.1, streaming online, or connecting through our mobile app, WABE keeps you on top of election 2024 in what's sure to be a pivotal year in politics. And for candidates and ballot information, visit our election hub at wabe.org/election2024.